Parsha told us, of course, told us Yitzchak, and in due time we will deal with told us Yitzchak, that is to say, the children of Yitzchak, Yaakov and Esav. But the opening pasuk itself, of course, is already a cause for comment. For the simple reason, this is Perek Kaf Hei Pasuk Yotes, Ve'ele Toldos Yitzchak Ben Avram, Avram Holides Yitzchak. These are the children, generations of Yitzchak, son of Avram. Avram begat Yitzchak. And of course, as we can appreciate, and Rashi notes, as do others, there is effectively the same thing stated twice in the Parsha. If you tell me that Yitzchak is the son of Avram, so then I know that Avram is the father of Yitzchak. I mean, that's two ways of saying the same thing. Interestingly, the Radak, and we have the Perush of the Radak on Chumash Bereishis, he sees here an example or expression of the concept which we're more familiar with in Noach, of Zecher Tzadik Livracha, whereby you mention a tzaddik, you say something in his praise. Of course, that's the famous Rashi with regards to Noach. Eile told us Noach, and Noach is a tzaddik. So Eile told us Yitzchak has a similar theme occurring, whereby we're presenting the children of Yitzchak ben Avram, but having mentioned Yitzchak ben Avram, the pasuk then says Avram holded as Yitzchak. And what does that mean? What does that add? What it adds is a praise of Yitzchak, as if to say you could see on him. Wherever Yitzchak went, people said, that's the son of Avram. Avram holded as Yitzchak. He is a continuation of Avram. And therefore, the second half of the pasuk doesn't add anything, we would say, mishpachological within the equation, because we got that from Yitzchak ben Avram. But Avram holed es Yitzchak is a character assessment. It reflects the quality of Yitzchak, that you could see Avram holed es Yitzchak. That's a very interesting comment of Radak. After all, Mefarshim ask, if the explanation, the beginning of Noach, is when you mention a tzaddik speaking his praise, how come we only find it with regards to Noach? Noach was a tzaddik, but he's not the only tzaddik. If it's a principle, it should be applied as a matter of principle. And that itself is a question. But according to the Radak, at least in the case of Noach, Yitzchak, we do find also Zecher Tzadik Livracha in the form of Avram Holid Es Yitzchak. So that's an interesting approach from one of the Rishonim. But I would like to move from there to a somewhat more, shall we say, conceptual approach to the second half of this pasuk, Avram Holid Es Yitzchak. And it's found in a sefer called Arvei Nachal. Arvei Nachal is a set of drushas from Rabbi David Eibeshitz. He's actually known in the halachic world as the author of the commentary Levush Yisrad, which is on the Orach Chaim. But he has a hand in everything. He was also his teachers were among the great Hasidic masters, and therefore we won't be surprised to hear him moving in that type of domain. We know that Avram and Yitzchak as individuals also represent two concepts, two attributes. Avram represents the attribute of kindness, of chesed, as we say, titin emes le Yaakov, chesed l'Avram. Yitzchak, on the other hand, represents midas hadin more, he's pachad Yitzchak, he's gevuras Yitzchak, and therefore these two patriarchs, they introduce and represent within the Jewish people and embody those two concepts. The question, of course, is what's the relationship between the two? What the Arvei Nachal is beckoning us to do is to move away from a kind of a vision where we see these two attributes in competition with each other. And you have Midas Hadin and Midas Harachamim, you have kindness and you have justice, and they're warring with each other, and then each person takes their side. But that is, of course, a very superficial and a misrepresenting understanding of the situation. If one would say, looking at things that way does not do justice to Midas Hadin. Rather, we know from the very beginning that Bereshis Bara Elohim, the first name we meet in the Torah, is HaKadosh Baruch Hu acting with the attribute of justice. Elohim is the name of Din. And as Rashi tells us, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted, or initially considered, more correctly, considered creating the world b'midas hadin. B'techila ala b'machshava livras ha'olam b'midas hadin. That was the original thought. However, people are people, and he saw that the world would not last that long if it was run up'midas hadin. And therefore, shitev imam midas harachamim. So he twinned the attribute of mercy together with that, and that is the concept in Perek Beis of Parshas Bereishis, b'yom asos Hashem Elokim, yudke vavke together with Elokim. And of course, there are many questions one could ask about this Rashi, but two basic questions are, and it's from Chazal, is firstly, do we not say in Tehillim Olam Chesed Yibona, do we not say that the world is created as an act of kindness? If it's created as an act of kindness, so why is the original thought that it should operate based on the attribute of justice? That seems to be a conflict of interest. And secondly, and perhaps more worryingly, the way that it's depicted, originally HaKadosh Baruch Hu thought to create like this, but then he saw that that's not going to work, and therefore he did something else. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has absolute wisdom and knowledge at all times. It's not something that he needs to think about and then consider. If that's not the way, so then why is it considered in the first place to subsequently realize that it wouldn't work? But actually, as the Mefarshim explained, because it's interesting, the words Bereshis Bara Elokim are stated as a matter of fact. So it's interesting that Rashi says this is what HaKadosh Baruch Hu thought that he would do, so to speak. It sounds like he did it. Bereshis Bara Elokim sounds like it was done. Which means the original thought that the world should run according to Midas Hadin remains. It remains as the ideal. And whereas it may be true that on a practical level, most people cannot abide by it, the ideal has not disappeared. It still exists. And why is it the ideal? To come to our first question, if the world is created as an act of kindness, why should it be run according to Din? But the answer is that Din, at the end of the day, justice serves the cause of kindness. And by that we mean that there's different ways that one can bestow kindness, lahavdil, in our own experience. If you give a person free things and he has no responsibility, no accountability, so you've only been kind to them to a certain degree because they remain a recipient and they remain underdeveloped and not much has really happened with them. Din means the person is expected to earn their way, to pay their way, to do things themselves, and in a sense, that's the ultimate kindness that you can do to someone. Rav Huttner gives an interesting mashal, again, within the realms of someone needs money, he's fallen on hard times. If one wishes to bestow kindness on him, one can do so in one of two ways. You can either give him a handout, give him money, or you can get him a job. And whereas a very superficial vision says, take the money, because it's free, but we understand that the kindness is much deeper if you give him the wherewithal to produce his income by himself. It's a higher form of kindness, ultimately. We say the world existed for 26 generations only on kindness. Those are the 26 kilo olam chastos that we talk about in Tehillim. We say in Psukei Dezimra on Shabbos. And that was until Matan Torah. Comes Matan Torah, that's it. There's no more kilo olam chastos. But the question is, where did they go? And Rav Huttner explains that with the giving of the Torah, kindness didn't disappear. Kindness deepened, in the sense that until this point, largely the world has been given to people for free. But now the Jewish people have been given the ability to keep it going and to been given the responsibility for the well-being of the world. That is the greatest kindness. You've effectively made them partners in the maintenance of the world There's no greater gift that you could give them. It involves accountability by its very nature, but ultimately it serves the form, the cause of kindness. And that is why we say that even though the pasuk says Olam Chesed Yibaneh, the world is created as an act of kindness, the best way to bestow that kindness is for people to operate according to Midas Hadin. In fact, there's a footnote elsewhere in the Pachet Yitzchak on Sukkos, newly reprinted with the further Ma'amarim. There's a pasuk that we say, and it expresses itself in our tefillos. The pasuk at the beginning of Lech Lecha, Hashem says to Avram three or four things: Ve'esecha l'goy gadol, I'll make you a great nation. Vavarechecha, I'll bless you. Vagadla shemecha, I'll make your name great. Ve'heyeh baracha, and you will be blessing. And Rashi quotes, and it's from the Gemara, this finds expression in the beginning of the Shemona Esrei. How so? Because we say Elokei Avram, Elokei Yitzchak, Ve'elokei Yaakov. All of those are expressions of that pasuk in the beginning of Lech Lecha. As the Gemara says, Ve'esecha l'goy gadol, I'll make you a great nation. That's why we say Elokei Avram. Avram is like a nation. Va'varechecha, I'll bless you even more. That's why we say Elokei Yitzchak. Va'agad l'shemecha, I'll make your name great. That's Elokei Yaakov. Further and further blessing for Avram as expressed with his son and his grandson. And then says the Gemara, Yochol you chos min bekulam. So you might think that we'll conclude the bracha with all of them, which is an interesting thought. After all, in the bracha, in the actual text, we mentioned Elokei Avram, Elokei Yitzchak, Elokei Yaakov. But when it comes to the end of the bracha, which is like a summation of everything, one might have thought that we'll say Baruch Atah Hashem, Magen, Avram, Yitzchak, VeYaakov. But they're the ones mentioned, and we bring them back. Or at the very least, in a more general sense, to say Magen Avos, which is what we do actually on Friday night. But we don't say Magen Avos. We say Magen Avram. Avram is the only one who's in the conclusion of the bracha, and the Gemara darshens it from the pasuk, because the conclusion is Veheyeh bracha. You'll be the bracha. Bechayu chosmin. The conclusion is only with Avram. And the question is, what does this mean? I mean, why did the other two go missing? They made it into the text of the first bracha, but they didn't make it into the ending. So Rav Huttner explains, the ending of the bracha, the chasima of the bracha, it's lahavdil, but it's really like the bottom line of anything. The bottom line of any text or of any document effectively sums up what the whole thing is about. And really, as much as you will have Avram with his attribute, chesed, and Yitzchak with Midas Adin, the attribute of justice, and then Yaakov somehow a blend in the middle, that's all true. But what's it all about? What's the bottom line of all of these middos? It comes back to Avram. They're all in the service of Avram, the middah of Chesed. Even Yitzchak's middah and Yaakov's middah, Din and Emes and Rachamim or whatever they'll be called, they all serve the cause of the initial Chesed, and that's why it ends only with Avram. He has the last word, he's the bottom line. If we could put it slightly differently, the difference between the reason why Din is a greater form of Chesed than Chesed itself, effectively that's what we're saying, is that Chesed, kindness, accommodates, but Din elevates. It changes the person, it raises the person. That's the greatest kindness that can happen. And indeed, we mentioned that the original thought of the world operating according to Din, most people can't abide by it. But you understand that it's the ideal, and it didn't go away, and there are some people who were able to abide by it, and for them they realized the ideal of Bria. And the classic example begins with a discussion in Maseches Menachos, and Daf Kaftes Amud Beis, it's a well-known section, whereby Moshe, he goes up to receive the Torah, and as the Gemara explains it, he finds HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he's sitting there, and he's attaching crowns to the letters. Those are the crowns that we have on those letters, Shatnez Gates, the Shin, the Ayin, etc., those tagin, those lines. And Moshe asks, what are these for? And Hashem responds, in the future, there will be someone who will darshan halachas from these crowns, and that's why they're there. So Moshe's very intrigued. He wants to know. His name is Rabbi Akiva. Akiva ben Yosef Shemo. So Moshe wants to hear. He wants to see Rabbi Akiva in action. And because he's Moshe, he can ask. And he does ask. Har'eini Tarasa. Show me. I'd like to see. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu transports him to a shir of Rabbi Akiva. It's an amazing thing. I think he sat in the back. He didn't want to disturb anyone. There's nothing more distracting than having Moshe Rabbeinu walk into the shir. So he kept a low profile. I think the Gemara says he was in the eighth row. Okay. Now you know which is the most prestigious row. And he's looking at very impressed. It's Rabbi Akiva, and he sees he's darshining, etc. And then Moshe says, Rabbi Akiva is just outstanding. What's going to happen with him? What's his end? How does it all end with Rabbi Akiva? The end with Rabbi Akiva was gruesome. It's killed by the Romans. And Moshe has to ask the question, which has been expressed in many other ways. Zotorah v'zuschara. That's look at his Torah. That's his reward. Moshe, he can't... couldn't understand. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to him, Amar lo, shesok, be silent. Kach ala b'machshav alafonai, that's what I've decided, and that's that. That's the end of the Gemara. So Moshe asks the question, and he gets rebuffed, it seems. He gets silenced. That's it, Hashem. Now the simple understanding of that Gemara is that Moshe raises the question, and Hashem said, I don't want to talk about it. You won't understand. These are my ways. You won't understand. And therefore, I don't want to talk about it. Which means that Moshe's question was never really answered. It's just, the answer is it's in the realms of the unknowable for you, and that's that, and I don't want to talk about it. Except the problem is, it really sounds like Hashem does want to talk about it, for the simple reason that why is he tying these crowns as Moshe comes to receive the Torah? HaKadosh Baruch Hu has infinite capacity and infinite time, to oversimplify both of those concepts, which means he's well capable of presenting the Torah, the finished product, and when Moshe goes down and he opens the Sefer Torah and he sees those crowns, so he'll wonder what they are, but it's too late. But if you're just tying the crowns when Moshe's coming, it really sounds like you want him to ask what you're doing. And when he asks, you'll tell him. And when you tell him, he'll ask more. And when you show him, he'll ask more. And then he'll ask the question. And you say, I don't want to talk about it. So if you don't want to talk about it, so why did you set up the conversation? If you don't want it to end. If you don't want it to reach a conclusion. And that is why there's a fascinating approach to this whole exchange, which is to be found in the Sefer Toras Chaim, one of the great early Acharonim, Rabbi Avraham Chaim Shur. In Maseches Bava Kama, I think it's on Daf Nun, and it's quoted by the Shalom HaKadosh. And the Toras Chaim says, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to Moshe, Kach ala b'machshava lefanai, this is what I thought, he was not rebuffing the question. He's not rejecting the question. He's answering the question. Because the question is, how can Rabbi Akiva be dealt with so harshly? And what's the answer to that question? The answer is, this is the way the world was ideally meant to be. That everyone has absolute comeuppance for every small thing that they do, to the extent that by the time they leave the world, they're absolutely clear and fully deserving of every good thing that they get. That's why we say, Rashi said, Mitchila Allah b'machshava liver as ha'olam b'midas hadin. The original thought was to create the world, b'midas hadin. Most people can't abide by it, but Rabbi Akiva could. And that's why Hashem said, Kach Allah b'machshava lafanai. This is the type of person for whom that original thought existed, and it still remains because he's able to abide by it. And indeed, the Gemara says that when Rabbi Akiva's soul left the world, a baskal came out. A heavenly voice and says, Ashrecha Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva is mezuman l'chai olam haba. He's ready for olam haba. Asked the Or HaChaim HaKadosh in his Sefer on Maseches Brachos, Chepetz Hashem, firstly, I should hope so. In other words, if Rabbi Akiva is not ready for olam haba, so who is going to be? And why does it need a bus call? A bus call is there for a special occasion, an unusual situation. We say, everyone has a chelek, and when Rabbi Akiva is ready for Olam Haba, it was like a big event. But the point is, Rabbi Akiva was mezuman l'chay olam haba. He's ready straight away. There's nothing outstanding, no accounts. Everything's been settled. It's been absolutely up in midas hadin. So this is a very, I believe, central and important way of looking at the relationship. We hear these concepts the whole time, the attribute of justice, the attribute of kindness, the attribute of mercy. To see them as warring with each other is to miss the point completely, for ultimately they're harmonized and they serve each other. And the one that served most, the greatest expression of kindness is Din, which means Din effectively serves the cause of kindness. And all of this coming back to the beginning of Parshas Toldos, which is where we started, where you have, it's officially introducing Toldos Yitzchak ben Avraham. Yes, these are the generations of Yitzchak ben Avraham, but it adds something that we thought we knew. Avram holed es Yitzchak. Avram begat Yitzchak. That is extra information, it's superfluous. What does it mean? What it means is, in addition to their familial relationship, that Yitzchak is the son of Avram, conceptually, Avram is the father of Yitzchak. That is to say, the midah of kindness, which represents Avram, which is embodied by Avram, is the father of the midah of justice, represented by Yitzchak, because justice serves the cause of kindness in the way that the Mefarshim describe. So that's a very interesting look. Again, so many different angles on the first pasuk, and all the pasuk tells us his names. He's the son of him, he begat him, so many different layers to understand the significance of those words. I just want to make one or two comments with regards to one of the important episodes at the beginning of the parsha, which is the sale of the Bechora, Esav's sale of the Bechora to Yaakov. And what happens is, in Pasuk Kaftes, Perek Kafhei, Pasuk Kaftes, Vayazid Yaakov, Nazid Yaakov is cooking this cooked dish. Vayavo Esav min hasadeh v'hu ayeh. Esav comes from the field, he's tired. Or Zunkelus translates, he's thirsty. Okay. Vayomer Esav Yaakov haliteni namin adom adom azeh. Please give me some of this red stuff, ki ayef anochi, because I'm tired. That's where they called him Edom. Okay, interestingly, he's called Edom, not because he came out red, which the pasuk said that he did, vayetzeh harishon admoni, that wasn't enough to get him the name Edom. But when he says min adom adom, that's why everyone started to call him Edom. Okay, so says the pasuk. What does he mean when he says haliteini na? It's interesting, because we normally translate the word na, we're schooled by Rashi. Rashi tells us in a number of places, ein na ela loshen bakosha. Na means please. If you put that into our situation, so you have an amazing moment where Esav is actually saying please. Haliteini na, I guess if you're desperate, you'll be polite. Haliteini na min adom adom hazeh. Perhaps it means please. Although, in the primary translation of na, is actually now. The word not primarily means now. Sometimes it can also mean please. But Unkelus again translates, at imni ka'an, give it to me now. That's a little bit more in keeping with the Esav that we know. Give it to me now. Okay. Interestingly, others explain that the word not has another meaning, which is perhaps connected to the second. In Parshas Bo, when the Torah presents the halachos of Korban Pesach, so there's a number of ways that it has to be prepared, etc., and it can't be eaten otherwise, the pasuk says, Al tochlu mimenu na. Don't eat from it na. And what does na mean? Not fully cooked. That's called na. And maybe incompletely cooked is also relates to now. In other words, not enough time has elapsed. And some explain, haliteini na means I don't care whether you finish cooking, whether it's raw, half cooked, fully cooked, whatever, in whatever state it is, he wants these lentils. And in fact, the less cooked they are, the more reddish they are. Min ha'adom ha'adom. And these are the explanations of haliteini na. But either way, Yaakov says, Vayomer Yaakov, Michra Chayom es Becharas Chali, I want you to sell me your Bechora. Okay. How does Esav respond to this? Vayomer Esav, Hineo Nechi Olech Lamus, behold, I'm going to die. V'lam ezali Bechora, so what do I need Bechora for? Okay. What does he mean by this? So I think it's fair to say that when we hear these words of Esav, it sounds like he's saying, I'm so tired, I'm so exhausted, I'm going to die right now. If you don't give me some of that food, so why would I want the Bechorah if I'm going to expire within the next 90 seconds? Hine anochi holech lamos. Interestingly, no Mefarish explains it in this way. None of the commentators actually say that that's what Esav meant, because it's extremely unlikely that he was literally going to die at that time. The Pasuk came in and says that he's tired. Okay, just because he's tired, it doesn't mean he's going to die. That's got to be the most melodramatic statement in the entire Chumash. If you don't give me time to eat now, I'm going to drop dead on the spot. It's unlikely that that's actually true, especially as if ayef means thirsty, then he doesn't need food. He needs something to drink. So what does he mean, therefore, when he says, Hine anochi halech lamus, I'm going to die? And what's it got to do with whether he needs the Bechora? So interestingly, there are two explanations here, because there's two aspects to the birthright. There's two aspects to being the Bechor. The first is spiritual. He's the one who's involved in korbanos. And the second is that he will get a double portion of the inheritance. So one is spiritual and one is more material. And different mefarshim focus on different of those two aspects to explain what he means when he says, Hine anochi halech lamus. Rashi takes the more spiritual, because the Bechorah brings with it the responsibility of avoda, of korbanos. But korbanos have many halachos. Whoever offers the korban has to be careful. There's a number of things. If he does the wrong thing by the korban, he can incur liability of misa b'dei shamayim, of death at the hands of heaven. And therefore, when Esav says, Hine anochi alech lamos, you said you want the bechorah. You can have it. If I do it, I'm pretty sure I won't last a day before I do something wrong. And I don't care. So he neonuchi alech lamis, I would just die by the Bechora anyway. For me, it's not a good thing. For me, it's a liability. I would not abide by all those laws, and the consequences are very severe. So take it. That's how Rashi explains, in terms of the spiritual side of things, avodas hakorban. But there's also money. Pishnayim, double portion inheritance, not to be sniffed at. And Esav says, I don't need it. Why does he say that? So here there is a million-dollar comment of the Ibn Ezra. Again, Esav says, I'm going to die, so what do I need the Bechora? When are you going to die? Right now? Not right now. He's not going to drop dead right now. So when is he going to die? Says the Ibn Ezra, every day. Every day Esav is going to die. In what sense? In the sense that he leads a very dangerous life. He's out in the forest with wild beasts. All the humans that he knows are probably not much better, and he's for sure made enemies by now. Which means just the way that he lives his life. Whenever he leaves the house, he's going to die. Potentially, that day, he never knows if he's going to be coming back or if someone or something will catch up with him on that day from his past. So where does that leave him with regards to the Bechora? The firstborn inherits a double portion. Quite so. There's just one proviso. He needs to live longer than his father. Otherwise, it doesn't make a difference. And that's why Esav says, I know there's money there, but that could be years in coming. I go to my death every day, which means I don't rate my chances of lasting that long. So I'm not going to hold out for something that I'm probably never going to be around in order to receive. What do I need the Bechora for? So that's a very interesting explanation of Hinei Anochi Holech Lamus. In terms of my insurance policy, I wouldn't put too much on being around for the Bechorah. So says Esav. Okay. One final point about the sale, and Acharonim expand on this a little bit more, but just to see it already from the Rishonim, Rashbam. Our picture of the sale is that Esav wants the food, and Yaakov says, I want the Bechorah, you got to sell me the Bechorah, and they exchange Bechorah for food. And should you say, that doesn't sound like a very fair price, a bowl of food, a pot of lentils for the Bechorah, the answer might be, that's business. As if to say, the price of anything is what you're prepared to pay. But it still doesn't sound exactly right, because Yaakov would do that, in other words, to hold him ransom almost, just for this pot of lentils. But the Rashbam says, if you look at the Pasuk, there is absolutely no compelling evidence that the price for the birthright was the food. Meaning, what we do see is that when he says, give me some of that food, Yaakov says, I want you to sell me your Bechorah. That's the stipulation. I'll give you the food, but I want you to sell me the Bechorah. For what? Doesn't say. And moreover, Rashbam says, that if you look in the pasuk which describes the actual sale, which is in the end of Lamed Gimel, Yaakov says, I want you to swear, and he swears, and the end of pasuk Lamed Gimel says, Vayimkor es becharaso li Yaakov. He sold his becharah to Yaakov. That's it. Next pasuk, Yaakov, Nasan Esav Lechem, and Zidat Hashem, he gave him bread, he gave him the food, etc. In other words, these are two separate things. It is true that Yaakov demands that he sell him the Bechorah, but that doesn't mean that the price for the Bechorah is the food. The price is whatever the Bechorah goes for. That's done in the end of Pasuk Lamed Gimel. Now, Yaakov honoring his side of the agreement, you sold me the Bechorah from which I paid you, however much it is. And now I said that I give you the food, so here's the food. But the food was not the price for the Bechorah. Rashbam comments, Vayimkor es Bechoroso, he sold his Bechorah, Bedomim, for money. How much? Going rate. It probably wasn't that much, given Esav's prospects of surviving for it, but however one assesses these things, that was for money, however much it was. That's done. V'acharkein, says Rashbam, Yaakov nasan le'Esav. He gave him the food as he said that he would. So that's very interesting, just to get us thinking. We have a certain, we make an assumption that because he says, give me the food and sell me the Bechorah, that the food was the price for the Bechorah. That's not necessarily the case at all, according to Rashbam. Okay, let's move a little further in the end of Perek Kafvav to a pact that Yitzchak makes with Avimelech. Let's see the Psukim, Pasuk Kafvav, Perek Kafvav, Pasuk Kafvav. Okay, there's been trouble. We've skipped over a number of psukim. There's been trouble between Yitzhak and Avimelech. They keep on filling in his wells. They keep on stealing his wells. They keep on arguing with him. In the end, they kind of send him away. Then, Avimelech halach elav migror. Avimelech travels to Yitzhak. He's almost like he set up camp a certain amount of distance away. So Avimelech travels to him. Vachuzas meri'ei with an entourage. Ufichol sartzavo, and also Fichol his general. Fichol is a very interesting character. He appears twice in the Chumash, and we never hear him say or do anything. He's just always there. In Parshas Vayera, Avram originally made a pact with Avimelech. And who did he go with? Fichol. What did Fichol do? Nothing that we know of. What did he say? Nothing. He's there. So to hear. He's there. It's especially interesting. A Talmud of mine once asked me this question. His name is Pichol, which sounds like he's all mouth. But we never hear a word from him. That's an interesting connection. But in any case, Avimelech is here. So, and how does Yitzchak receive them? Let's watch these psukim carefully. Vayomar lehem Yitzchak, Madu abasem elai? Why have you come to me? Atem senesimusi, you hate me, and you sent me away. And they say, no, we've seen Hashem is with you, and we want to make a pact, as they say in the end of Pasuk Kavches. V'nichrasa baris imach, we'd like to make a pact with you. So, it's interesting, Yitzchak's response, just to consider it, just to read the psukim. Avimelech has come to him, and Yitzchak is very harsh with them, not particularly welcoming to them, and speaks to them in a way which is very blunt. Why are you coming here? You don't like me. You sent me away. What do you want? I mean, that's really what it sounds like. I mean, there is a concept of covered malchus. Moshe gives covered to Paro. But Yitzchak talks to them in this way. In the end, they do make a bris. They do make a pact. And in Pasuk Lamed Beis, Vayi Bayomahi, Vayi Bayomahu, sorry, let's see Pasuk Lamed Gimel. Vayikra Osar Shiva. Oh, in other words, in Pasuk Lamed Beis, they have the seventh well. Vayikra Osar Shiva, they call it Shiva. Al Kain Shema Ir Be'er Sheva Ad Hayom Hazeh. And therefore, it's called, the name of the city is Be'er Sheva. So what's interesting is, what happens here? There's a seventh well, because Avram had his three wells, and Yitzchak had his three wells, and here's the seventh well, Sheva, Be'er Sheva, and that's a good reason to call it Be'er Sheva, which they do. There's just one problem. It's already called Be'er Sheva. Hmm. It's called Be'er Sheva by Avram. In the end of Parshas Vayera. So as events go, it's somewhat lacking in historic import, given that they call it, we shall hereby name this place, Be'er Sheva. It is Be'er Sheva. So what is the meaning of giving a name to a place that already has that name? The Chidah, in one of his works, a sefer on the Torah, Pnei David, see, he asked a simple question, which is really behind all of this. Here is Avimelech and Pichol and his entourage. What do they want? We'd like to make a pact. We'd like to make a bris between us and you. It's a great idea. So good, in fact, that it's already happened. Because, once again, all of this is a repeat of things that happened in the end of Parshas Vayera. In the end of Vayera, Shishi, Avimelech comes and says, let's make a pact. And they do. So what is the meaning of making a pact if it's already been made? Everything is being repeated here. But the point is, as the Gemara explains in Masechah Sotah, they made a pact. But then they broke it. In other words, when Yitzchak comes, and Yitzchak is the son of Avram, you have a pact with Avram, non-aggression, etc. and so forth, mutual support, and Yitzchak comes and you give him a hard time. And then you run him out of town. So they broke the deal. But now, they'd like to make a new deal. What changed? What changed is, originally, the only thing that exists is the fact they made a deal. That's not a basis for honoring a deal, just the fact that it exists. Now, they see that Yitzchak is the type of person that they would do well by having a deal with him, having a pact with him. In other words, the original pact, it was just their word, but they're not people of their word. So pacts come and go. It depends. If we don't think that we should abide by it, we'll just ignore it. But now, Yitzchak seems to be doing very well. So we've had a fantastic idea. Let's make a pact. Because now it works well for us. And so we'd like to do that. So we'll let bygones be bygones and start again. And has to say, it's very clear, some things in this region have not changed. In other words, anyone that we make a pact with, the question as to whether they honor their pact has nothing to do with whether they made one. It has to do with whether it's worth their while. And history gets forgotten very quickly. So, this town was originally called Be'er Sheva by Avram. But why? Interestingly, it was called Be'er Sheva not from the expression of seven, but from the expression of Shavua, of an oath. It's the oath they took. That's what it says in Parshas Vayera. Vayikra Shema Makomu Ber Sheva Kisham Nishbu'u Shnehem. It's Sheva because of Shavuot, because they took an oath. There's just one problem. They broke it. So the place may as well not be called Be'er Sheva anymore. They probably renamed it rather quickly because they don't want to remember that oath because it wasn't worth it for them. So now it's like the place was never called Be'er Sheva. It's like nothing ever happened and we're starting again. But that's really why Yitzhak speaks to them in this way. Because when they come, they're clearly coming to make a pact. And Yitzhak said, but we already have one. Why are you here? I thought it wasn't worth it for you to make a pact with me. Look how you honored our pact. Why do you make another one for? They said, no, things have changed. Pasuk Kavches. We see that Hashem is with you. You're actually an asset to us. We've realized that we could actually gain by making a pact. That's a different situation now. And therefore, we'd like to have a pact. Okay. Which they do. And therefore, they did a very interesting thing. They brought back the name Be'er Sheva. But now it's Be'er Sheva for a different reason, for the seven wells. Seven wells is harmless enough that it will probably stick. And it does. And that's why Pasuk Lamed Gimel says, Vayikra Osar Shiv'ah, Alkein Shema'ir Be'er Sheva Ad Hayom Hazeh. That's why the name of the place is Be'er Sheva until this very day. In other words, it was called Be'er Sheva twice. The first one didn't last very long because that was after the Shavuah. You want them to honor their Shavuah. I wouldn't change too many road signs based on that. But once it's called after the seven wells, so that remained until our time. That's the chiddush of what happened with Yitzhak. So these are very straight, good parshanut insights with regards to these psukim. Otherwise, this section of Toldos seems to be literally a redundant reiteration or rehashing of what happened in Vayera to understand the different circumstances and the different outcomes from them. Okay, let's just conclude by referring to the section at the end, which is the Perek of the Brachos, which is Pasuk Perek Kav Zayin and Perek Kav Ches. And to raise some questions that we've raised in the past and to see perhaps a new perspective. Clearly, Yitzhak wants Esav to receive the Brachos. Okay, and the question, of course, is why? He knows that Esav is not Yaakov, but somehow he chooses Esav. Rivka disagrees. And for her, it's got to be Yaakov. What is the basis of their disagreement? There is an interesting comment of the Targum Yonas and Ben Uziel, one of the classic Targumim, on Perek Kaf Zayin, Pasuk Kaf Zayin. Let's have a look at that Pasuk there. It's actually a very enigmatic sounding Pasuk and certainly needs some comment. Something enters with Yaakov. Vayigash vayishaklo, so we've moved forward really to that part where he approaches. This is Yaakov pretending to be Esav. Vayorech esreach begodov. And he smells the scent of his clothes. Vayvarcheu, and he gives him a blessing. Whether this is a prelude to the v'yitin lecha or another blessing. Vayomer, and he says, Re'ei reach b'ni kireach sadeh asher berachu Hashem. See, this is the scent of my son, like the scent of the field that Hashem has blessed. I mean, that is a very, very esoteric sounding pasuk. What's the field and what's the scent and what's the aroma? And the Targum Yonason says that when Yaakov entered, the aroma of the Ketores entered with him. Okay. What is the meaning of the aroma of the Ketores? We know there's different aromas, even associated with the Beis HaMikdash. There's Reach Nichalach, right? There's the aroma of the Korbanos. But it was the aroma of the Ketores that entered with him. That's what it's all about. Says the Shem Yishmuel. Korbanos generally and Ketores differ in one key respect. There is no room for a korban from someone who is a Rasha, from someone who's acting in a wicked way. In fact, the Pasuk says, Zebach Rishoim To'eva. The korban of a Rasha is an abomination. Stop being a Rasha, and then you can bring a korban. However, when it comes to Keteris, we find that's not true. There is room even for the lowest spiritual strata within the Keteris. How is this represented? Because of the 11 ingredients in the Keteris, the Gemara states in Krisus and Daf Vav, one of them is a very foul odor. It's the Chelbana, Galbana. It smells awful. But it combines together with the rest, and it's part of the Keteris. And they enhance it, and it enhances them, and it all works out. So it's very interesting that they differ in this key respect. That for when it comes to Korbanos, there's no room for Rishayim. When it comes to Keteris, it's deficient without them. And the Gemara says, you see from here, that any public fast day which doesn't have Rishayim also hasn't really achieved the point, because they've got to be part of it. It learns that lesson from the Keteris. So, why is this so? Says the Shemi Shmuel of Sokachov, a korban represents closeness. Korban is from the word karov. It's a person drawing close to Hashem. You can't do something like that if you're very far away. And a Rasha is someone who's far away. However, a Rasha is defined. So, it's not a good fit. It's wrong. A Rasha brings a korban, he's so far, and he's acting like he's getting close. Not appropriate. Keteres is not about proximity. It's about connectivity. The word keteres actually relates to the word kesher. Kutra is a kesher. And at the end of the day, everyone is connected. Even the Rishayim. They are connected. They're not with zero connection. And that connection can be developed. And this brings us to Esav and Yaakov. Yaakov is close. Yaakov Ishtam Yosef Aholim. What about Esav? Esav is a very complicated person. And the complexity of Esav, it begins literally from the womb. Because if we take a look at the Psukim in the beginning of Parsha, when Rivka is expecting, and there's trouble, and there's turbulence, Yisrotzu Abonim Bikirba, Perek Kaf Hei, Pasuk Kaf Beis. So then the two sons they're causing all sorts of mayhem inside. Vatoma im kain, and she says, if so, lama ze anochi, why is this me? Vatel chadroshes Hashem, she seeks out the answer from Hashem, and Hashem's response is shnei goyim bevitech, there's two nations in you. Rashi comments from Chazal that goyim refers to two particular individuals, Antoninus, who was a very fine a Roman leader who was very close with Rebbe Yudan Nossi, Antoninus for Rebbe. There's all sorts of theories as to who Antoninus was. Some say he was Marcus Aurelius, whose full name was Marcus Antonius Aurelius, who was known as something of a tzaddik. Maybe someone else, whoever Antoninus was. And that's Hashem's answer to Rivka. But of course the question is, what's Rivka's question? Again, just to read the words. There's trouble, right? And she feels trouble inside, breakage and all sorts. Vatoma imkein, she says, if so, lama ze anochi, why is this me? What is that? What is the meaning of that question? In English, what does it mean? Why is this me? You're you. What are you asking? And she goes to find out the answer. But the explanation, says Meshechochma, is that Rivka clearly senses that one of her children is going in a bad direction. And therefore our question is, so I understand that not all of the children will necessarily be continuing the line. We've seen this before. She's seen it in her father-in-law's house. He has Yitzchak, he has Yishmael. Yitzchak continues, Yishmael doesn't. But if Yishmael's not part of the program, he's not carried by Sarah. Right? Sarah carries only Yitzchak because of the two. So Hagar carries Yishmael and he kind of gets put to the side. If there's another child that's going to be put to the side, so Lama Ze Anochi, so what's he doing in me? It's very different than with Yishmael. Yishmael's had a completely different mother. He developed in a completely different setting. But I've got both of them, and that's her question. How can there be someone going in the wrong direction, but he's together with the one who's going in the right direction? And the answer, says in Meshech Chochma, is because there's something about Esav. It has to be taken with great sensitivity. But you see that there are great people within Aesop, even people that don't become Jewish. Antoninus, as a shiner, did he become Jewish? Maybe yes, maybe no. Other great individuals have become Jewish from Aesop, not so much from Ishmael. And really what that means is there's something about Aesop, and that's the answer to your question. That's why he's being carried by you, because there's people like Antoninus that are going to come from him. There's something there. Of course, if it takes that many generations to come out, it's very, very deep inside. If the best you can say about Aesop is, well, fast forward, 2,000 years and something good will happen, so that's clearly, that's a very optimistic view. But if he came from Aesop, he's within Aesop, and that's part of Aesop being carried by Rivka. Well, Yitzchak is very conscious of the positive that exists within Esav. And there's a fascinating comment of the Medrash, because in the beginning of Perek Kaf Zayin, it states, Vayiki Zaken Yitzchak, when Yitzchak became old, Vatichena Einav Meraos, his eyes became dimmed from seeing. And the word meraos is redundant, because anyone whose eyes are dimmed from seeing. Eyes see. If your eyes are dimmed, they're dimmed from seeing. That's what it means for eyes to be dimmed. Elsewhere, when we say v'techena einav or lochasa einav, we don't add the word meraos. It's a redundant word. Rashi's comments actually are a response to that word meraos. Rashi's comments on this pasuk, that it's because of the smoke of his daughters-in-law, from Aesop's wives, or so on and so forth. That's meraos, from seeing that. It's a response to the word meraos. But the Medrash says an incredible thing. Vatechena einav meraos. His eyes were dimmed from seeing. Meraos bara. He could no longer see evil. That's a pasuk in Yeshaya. Otsam einav meraos bara. Yitzchak can't see evil anymore. Meaning, he's so developed in terms of a sense of what's life is about, and what's right and what's wrong, etc. When he looks at Esav, he sees straight away, for him, evil is nothing. It's a fiction. It's just the blockage in the way. But that doesn't get in the way of him seeing the good in Esav. He can't see bad anymore. Which means if there's good in Esav, that's what he sees. And that's why he's very conscious of Esav's connection. And therefore, when Esav's clothes bring in the reach of the Ketores, which represents the kesher that everyone has, and he feels that Esav also has that kesher, he feels that there's room for Esav within the future of the Jewish people, and decides to give him the blessings. Rivka disagrees in one key respect, and that is, she sees that Esav, even if it's true, and she has been told that it's true, there's something good within Esav. She knows it's not going to come out within Esav himself anytime soon, which means in the meanwhile, if he gets the blessings, he will squander them, he'll abuse them, and it's clear to her that as much as Yitzchak could only see the good in Esav, Rivka is very conscious of the bad in Esav. And why is she less optimistic? Because she sees that the only way that any good will come out from Esav as a person is if he develops it from the inside. He has a lot of which is negative about him. If there's something positive, he needs to develop it. Rivka sees that Esav is not in the developing business. He is not in the introspection business. The pasuk famously refers to him as a pig, right? When he's 40 years old, he gets married, just like his father got married when he was 40. Esav is so focused on these external trappings, like the pig. He sticks his hooves out. When he crouches down, he sticks his hooves out. His hooves are kosher. And he's fixated on how kosher he looks. And he's never will ask himself the question, but how kosher am I really, and can I do better? So if he only looks at the outside of his hooves, and never in the inside, there'll be no developing anything. And Rivka sees this. And as Mefarshim point out, she's seen it before. She grew up with Lavan. Lavan is like this. Lavan is all white. You can't pin anything on him. He's incapable of doing anything wrong. Whenever he's confronted, he always explains it, and so on and so forth. So she's seen this. I mean, it's an art form. And she sees that Esav is doing this, which means that there may well be good within him. But Esav is not going to activate that anytime soon. In the meanwhile, Yaakov needs the brachas. It's interesting to conclude, as we have done in the past, Esav's reaction to all of this in the end of Parshas Toldos ends with a wedding. I mean, Esav basically gets married at various intervals in Parshas Toldos. And he gets married again at the end of the Parsha. Why? And the Pasuk says, when he saw that the daughters of Canaan were not good for Yitzhak, so he married someone else. He married the daughter of Yishmael. Machlas bas Yishmael. That's the end of Parshas Toldos. It's a very interesting way to end. After everything that's happened, anything else happened? Yeah, Esau got married again. And that's it. And then it's Kaddish and Maftir. Why does the Parsha end in this way? Because this really is a statement about Esau. Hashem Mishmur says, one has to have imagined that at this moment he's been decades in the making to set up this relationship with Yitzhak, to get the brachas, and the whole thing crashed. It's one moment where Esav has like a cheshbon nefesh, and he thinks to himself, like, where did it all go wrong? Like, am I doing anything wrong? What is it? What can I change about myself? It was a moment, and he wasted it. Because his conclusion is, you know what my problem is? It's my wives. They're holding me back. That's why. I was that close. You know what? I just need to marry the right person and I'll be fine. That's a very sad way that the Parsha ends because Esav, all he can do is blame his wives. His problem is with his life, not with his wife. But as far as he's concerned, there's no looking in, there's only looking out. Who's the person closest to me that I can blame for everything that's going wrong with me? That's not a person that's going to develop anything inside. Rivka sees this. She sets in motion for Yaakov to get the blessings. And the rest, of course, is history. Until further notice, we'll leave it over there.